Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Vela Mbena. She is the author of Muddy Roads, Blue Skies, My Journey to the Foreign Service from Rural South to Tanzania and Beyond. Vela was born in the hometown community of Midway, Georgia, where she grew up with 8 siblings and parents who instilled in her the important values that would set her on the path to success. Throughout her youth, Vela dreamed of escaping small-town USA and traveling the world. In 1989, her dream came true when she was offered a position with the U.S. Department of State Foreign Service. During her highly successful 26 years as a diplomat, Vela served with honors in 13 foreign countries, as well as 2 tours in Washington, D.C. It was during her assignment in Tanzania that she met her future husband, whom Vela lovingly proclaims is the best thing to ever happen to her aside from her son, and he has forever changed her life for the better. Vela retired from the Foreign Service in 2015, and she currently resides in Amelia Island, Florida. Welcome, Vela. We're so delighted to have you on Living Above the Drama today.
Thank you, Dr. Georgiana. It's great to be here with you.
Well, you have a very wonderful story, and it's a story that I think informs and inspires. Because, you know, like so many people I've had the privilege of interviewing, you started from humble beginnings and you found your way to your dreams, which is always a powerful story and something that all of us like to hear. So why don't we start from the time you're a tiny little thing when you first you know, started to be formed by your family and your community and the dreams that came to you regarding what you wanted for the future. Why don't you bring us back there, okay?
Sure. Yes, my most vivid memory of wanting to start a career or just living as I have been for the past almost 30 years now was when I told my mother something that, of course, got me a whipping. And I was a little girl, and the kids in the community would go down to the ballpark to play, you know, ball on Sundays, baseball. And some little girl was just teasing me about being in prison because we could not go. So I started crying, and I told my mother, "You have us in prison. You know, we don't have a life." And she just reared back and she slapped me, and she said, "I have you in prison now so you can stay out of the big prison later in life." And she said, "You need to stay here. Stay with your kids and, I mean, your siblings, the other kids, and play ball right in this yard, because when you grow up, your family will be your friends. And you need to learn how to stay away from things that are bad." I didn't know what was bad down the street, but later I found out, you know, drugs, all this other good stuff, you know. So that really jarred me. And I took it throughout my young adult college and onto the Foreign Service, that just because someone else is saying something that could be good or appealing to me doesn't mean that if I go in it, that they'll be there for me. Family was very important then, and it is up until this day. So that held me together, you know, throughout from that day onward. So, you know, my mother, she was a rough mother. She didn't take any trash, you know, but, you know, she had to. My father was, you know, I wouldn't say he was a drunkard, but I mean, he drank a lot, you know, and he was on the road a lot with work. So she had to raise 8 kids. After there were 11 of us, but her sister kept 2 in Florida. That's why I had to have 8 in my book. So she didn't allow us to get out of line. And it did feel like prison, but it was okay because she made us play with each other. We became dependent upon each other. They became my friends. I became their friends. And that was my support group throughout my childhood. But my mother did not spare the rod. I mean, we got a line. You know, we couldn't understand it then, but I definitely understand it now. And I thank her for it.
Right. Well, I think I'm just sharing, you know, I know that you're a mom as well. I'm just sharing my own experience. I've raised my three children and always told them, this is your family and your siblings are your blood and they will be there for you long after your father and I are gone. So I raised them, and it was a struggle at times to be close friends and to really love and care for one another. And they do so much. They're all grown up now, and they're the best friends, and they can turn to one another, and they know they can depend. And I think your mother was very, very wise.
And you know, that it also carried into how I succeeded in the Foreign Service. I had a hard time trying, as a Black female, building my team in various countries, and even in Africa. So I sat back and I'm like, I've got to be able to pull this together. Yes, I was successful, but I'm not still going higher, but I wasn't getting the cooperation I needed. So I studied it, and I'm like, you know what? Most of these foreign countries, they believe in family, you know, just close family. So I need to use this concept to form a team, a cohesive team, where they really wanted to work for me and make sure that I succeeded, not just the project. And I did. You know, I started, you know, having parties and dinners at my house for my staff. I got to know their families better, sent their kids, you know, gifts for graduation, whatnot, had meetings with them that weren't really, you know, professional, you know, I mean, what about the job, about them. And they embraced it. They started calling me things like mama and auntie. And I had, and this was revealing to me. I remember during an incident, I told the guy to go home. You have worked enough. You don't need to stay here anymore. And he said, I told him the job will get done. He said, Mom, he said, I am not working for the job. I'm working for you. And I'm like, oh my God. He said, you are my mommy and I'm working for you. And how that translates to my promotion is because they did over and beyond for me, the job got done. The job gets done. My bosses, you know, give me kudos and Washington give me promotion. So I just thank God my mother instilled that sense of family that they will be there for you, you know, if you stay with them.
Right. Well, Leah, let's talk about that, because I think that sometimes we need to drill down into specifics. When we think of family, you know, we all have a concept, and every family has a different concept of what family is, of course. But when we think of what family is, when we look at it closely, it has a lot to do with respect. Respecting ourselves, respecting other people, and valuing them, which is, I'm sure, and I don't want to get off on a an aside with this, but the culture we're living in today in the United States, I mean, what we see on the national front is just a mirror. It's just a reflection of our culture, our family, the members of our family. Okay. And isn't it frightening that we could think we're all members of the same family, but we are. And whether you're talking about the extreme right, the extreme left, whether you're talking about, you know, so many of the concepts and the ideas that are floating out in our culture, whether we're talking about your family and your experience in the Foreign Service and all that you accomplished there, or whether we're talking about making a country healthy and happy, we're talking about values and how we treat one another. So tell us specifically, what was the job, because you were talking about the people who worked for you, what was the job that you were doing when you were first in the Foreign Service? How did your role develop as the leader within your Foreign Service community to help bring along this whole cooperation that you experienced? Because this is really what we have to start to look at as a country, as a nation, as individuals, whether it's within our marriage, our family, whatever it is, we need to start to drill down and get back to the basics. So would you share that with us?
Yes. Well, I started out in the technical field where I didn't really have to get down to the nitty-gritty of the job, you know, roll my sleeves up and literally started working, because IT is more than just, you know, just the concept of sitting as a manager. It's actually getting out there and fixing things. So I got down and dirty. And I felt that that's what I needed to gain the knowledge to go higher. And I did it because, you know, I said, when I go higher, I will not ask the people who work for me to do what I could not do or did not want to do. You know, I led by examples, good examples. And as I grew in my knowledge and in my confidence as a manager, I started delegating more. Like, okay, I had my team around me and they worked for me. They admired me because they knew that Madame, Mrs. Wells, that's who I was at the time. She respects us. She knows the job because she has done it. I would never let anyone do something that I would not do, or if they ask me to help them, if I've never done it before, to dig in. So they gave me the respect, you know, as their leader, because they knew where I came from early on in my career and that I had no limits on what I would do to get the job done. And I respected them. I respected their own cultural values. I had my values, and some overlap with theirs, and some did not. You've got to meet people where they are to get them to respect you. And
exactly.
You know, you can't try to bring them up. And that's what sometimes we do overseas. You know, we try to, like, make, because we're in mini America at our embassies abroad, we want anyone who comes to the door or we interact with on a professional or social level to be just like, you know, Brother Jerry or Pastor whatever. But we can't change people. We have to meet them. We will tell them what worked better, and that's what I did. You know, after I decided that I can't change folks, I'm just gonna have to tell them what works for me, what works for America, and then let them think about it. And it did affect changes. So I think just leading by example is good, is what we need to get back to, you know.
Right. Avila, would you agree? I mean, I think, you know, this is simplistic, but the bottom line is that values, what we value. I mean, if you really look at, I'm a little bit of a online news junkie, although I have to say, as of late, I've really backed off because I'm just, I can't listen to this one more minute, you know. But what seems to be the underpinning of this, and I think, you know, I think what's important in your story is to share with people where success comes from. And you mentioned it and identified it as the way you were raised, the values, how you learned to behave and treat others in the world. And because you were raised with family values, you begin to see the world as your family. You begin to see the people you work with as your family. And what I think is important, and I'd like you to, you know, illuminate on working outside the United States. I mean, you've spent so much time outside the U.S. I've spent time myself outside the U.S. And what you begin to realize is different cultures, different groups of people have a different worldview. They're looking at the important things or looking at life and what matters from a different set of lenses than we are necessarily. And so would you discuss, because you've been all over the world remarkably, you've had so much service in 13 foreign countries, which is pretty remarkable. What have you noticed? What has been the connecting value, or what has been the perspective that you could connect throughout your experience, your many years in foreign service, that you saw as creating community and creating success and cooperation? Because maybe we need to get back to that and send a letter to Washington, you know, and let them remind them about what they're forgetting about. So what was in that mix that you saw over those many years?
The key thing that I saw, and it came before family, was respect. kindness, being kind to them as human beings, you know, no matter whether I was in the Philippines and in Congo, in Lebanon, Afghanistan, wherever I was, the key thing was respect. Respect people as human beings, you know, not workers. And believe it or not, I've heard folks call natives in that country animals, you know, and treated them as such. No, really, and it hurt me to the core. But just respect. Everyone I worked with and came across in my social settings always say, you know, you foreigners, you know, meaning Americans and whatnot, y'all come into our country and you don't, you know, and you tell us how to run our country, do our elections, do this. You know, don't y'all know that we've been doing this for years? You know how to do this. You know, you call us names, you do this and you do that, and don't realize that, hey, we're human. We might be lighter, darker than you guys are, you know, or shorter, you know, not as robust in our presentation, but we're people. And I'm like, wow. I remember my with someone who's foreign, whose uncle worked in a foreign country as an ambassador, a big country, and he said one of our young diplomats came to visit for a meeting at the embassy, and he came in, and he should know the culture, but he had his backpack and he flopped it, you know, on this ambassador's couch, his foreign ambassador's couch, and he crossed his feet, which that was a no-no. And he said, and he had gum on the bottom of his shoes, and he just like, so okay now. And he said he didn't give me any respect as a person, let alone he didn't respect my culture and he didn't respect my position. So I think respect is it, because yeah, we demand respect, and we shouldn't think that, you know, that the world should respect Americans, you know, and it's not, and then we don't reciprocate. We have to reciprocate if we want things to work, if we want diplomacy to work, if we want friendships to work, you know, even if we want war to work, you have to, to a certain extent, respect your enemies, but, you know, being focused on what you need to do, whether it's good or bad.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that is a theme that we really need to return to. And we really need to look at parenting, and we need to look at what's being said at the pulpits across our nation. Vela, we have actually come to the first commercial break. We're going to take a very short break. We're going to come right back. And when we do, we have to bring up a very painful subject. We have to bring up your experience of the Al-Qaeda truck bomb, which killed 11 people, where you were and your part in that, your heroism that was recognized, and that whole experience that, I think you used the word, catapulted you really into the heart of your embassy and your work as as an ambassador. So I know it's a painful subject, but we do have to go there. So we will be right back. Don't go away, listeners, and we're going to hear more from Vela Mbena.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we are back. I'm speaking today with Vella Mbena, who is the author of Muddy Roads, Blue Skies, My Journey to the Foreign Service from the Rural South to Tanzania and Beyond. Vella, before the break, we were talking about the whole process of, you know, remembering what it is that human beings, all of us, what we all want and how we best respond to life, which is when we're valued and we're respected and we are part of a collective, whatever that collective might be. And we also talked about when we come back, we're going to have to talk about the terrorism that you experienced and that you lived through. It's quite a story. It's both frightening and heartbreaking and also inspiring. So if you would share with the listeners what you shared with me, how your day began on that very fateful day, that very glorious morning at the U.S. Embassy, and what evolved from there. So if you would share that with us.
Yes. Absolutely. I had about a week left at my assignment in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. It was the day of my going away party. So when you move to another country, you have to downsize. You know, you have to get rid of stuff. So the night before, I had locals, you know, the local nationals at my house getting stuff that they want. I never sold anything to anyone. It's not me. And so they wanted me to bring some of the stuff in because they had do other things that afternoon, but at evening. So that next morning, I parked in my normal, you know, parking space, which is coincidentally just, you know, feet away from where the bomb exploded. And I had an armful of the stuff that they had and other things that I found I wanted to give to people, because the Tanzanians, they have beautiful smiles and I love making them smile. But, you know, so I'm like, I'm going to get a lot of smiles this morning. So there was a young lady guard. She was a guard there, and she wanted to desperately move out of that position to something in the inside. And I had an operator position open. So she gave me her application and told me that she wanted to talk to me about it. And I said, okay, I'll be right back. You know, I need to take these things in. And she said, okay, madam, I'm waiting. And coincidentally, she was killed in the explosion. But when I went through, I was giving things away and the Tanzanians were smiling. It was a beautiful Tanzanian day. I mean, really just beautiful. And so I said, okay, let me go in my office. You know, I've got enough smiles, giving all the stuff away. Let me go in my office and get ready, because we had a new employee who was going to be in my position after I left. Well, my replacement, that is. And so she came in and I started doing the turnover with her. And she said, well, let me go and do some other out processing. I'm like, okay, fine. So I said, about a minute or two later, I said, let me call South Africa to get one of my Tanzanian staff in this training. So I had my operator place the call and he said, it's taking a while. I'm like, not a problem. So I said, let me run out to, you know, get some more stuff out of the car and stall this lady a little bit more, because I really need to get my morning routine done. And then I need to cash a check. And so I grabbed my check and I walked out of the suite where I worked, which was pretty much fortified because, you know, the nature of work that I did. And when I got down the hall, I heard a phone ring, and I'm like, it might be my phone, even though there were other offices around. So I went back into my suite and went all the way to the back of it. Something just led me to go to the back versus taking it right there at the front. And when I sat down, the opposite, it's Pretoria on the phone. And the young lady came on the phone, and I'm like, I'm concerned that my staff, Mr. XX, has not been accepted. And when I said that, boom, it wasn't that, you know, that light, of course. And I went sailing across the suite, and apparently I was knocked out. I didn't realize I was. But when I got up, rushed myself off, I was trained for contingency, for crisis. So I immediately kicked in. I mean, that training kicked in. I immediately started doing what I needed to do to secure the place, to alert Washington, to do all. I mean, it was like textbook, and I'm not exaggerating. I was shocked because I'm kind of a scary person. I thought, you know, maybe if something ever happened, I would just, you know, go under a rock. But I didn't. I rose to the occasion. After I was done, and I was doing all of this during all the wailing of the alarm system. This is not a trail. This is not a drill. Evacuate the embassy. So when I finally was able to evacuate, I secured everything. And as I backed out and looked around, I was just like at a loss of what had happened, because I really didn't know it was a bomb or anything. I said something bad happened. I sent a text message on our communication system to watch, and something bad happened. Stop all communications. It was that bad. You don't send stuff like that unless something terrible has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see Dr. Georgiana. I didn't see anyone. I didn't hear anyone. And the wailing of the siren had stopped. And all I felt was raw heat. And I went to several parts and I didn't see anybody. I didn't hear anyone. So finally I realized I was barricaded in the embassy unless I jumped out of one of the blown walls. And so I was scared to scream or do anything because I didn't know. Really, and don't think I'm crazy, but because I thought it had just happened. I didn't realize that I was out for a little bit. I thought maybe there were aliens, you know, who came and just swooped everyone up and took them away. But I saw blood, you know, and little things that I didn't recognize at the time scattered around. And wow. So I'm like, you know what? I had to scream. So I screamed, and that's when someone heard me from the outside, one of the Marines, and they told me how they maneuvered me out of the building to safety. And, you know, that's later in the day is when I realized what had happened.
Mm-hmm. But you had actually done some very heroic things that you became recognized for during that whole incident. So you want to share with us how you jumped into action?
Yes. Well, the first thing, you know, one of the hard things was I secured the classified stuff in our embassy because, you know, most of my job is of a classified nature. So, you know, to me, that's heroic. Knowing that something that had happened, yet to do my duty, I wasn't going to leave stuff out and around for someone to pilferage over and, you know my nation's secret or something like that, if, you know, so to speak. So that was one. And then I was smart enough to carry my communications contingency thing. We call it a tax set, to set up mobile communication. So when I got out of the embassy, you know, I saw them, the chargé d'affaires and my management officer, and I'm like, okay, sir, I said, you know, let me set this up for you. And he said, no, Bella, you get across the fence, get in the vehicle that's waiting, and you go to safety. And I'm like, well, I can. And he said, no. So I did. So when I got to the safe haven, they basically, there was no communication because, you know, the radio, our closed network system was at the embassy, which was blown up. So we couldn't communicate. And back then, you know, cell phone, we didn't have all the robust cell phone towers and stuff. So all the cell phones, well, the cell phone system had jammed. So I'm like, oh my Lord, I've got to get the backup radio, closed network radio, online. And that was at my house down the street. So I asked the driver, who was like, oh God, you know, what's going on? I said, can you take me to my house, please? You know, and he said, I can't because my boss wants me to stay. So I'm like, it's okay. You know, I didn't want to explain it, you know, because, you know, I had to do it in Swahili. So I ran out on the busy street, and it was busier now because that big kaboom. And I, you know, I just waved down a taxi and asked him in my Swahili, you know, buena, you know, dereva, you know, take me to my house. Something has bad happened to my embassy. And he did. And I got communications back up within minutes of arriving there. Then at least we could coordinate, you know, with the local hospitals and whatnot to get people evacuated or to you know, get them to help. I mean, for help. So then after that, when I returned, you know, to the safe haven location, and I had to rig up communication, you know, right then and there. You know, I called upon my family, you know, the family I had built there, and they would do anything for me, you know, and they would run down the street, you know, run to their car and go to the local, you know, computer company and to get this or get that to rig something up to be a little sustainable. Then after that, of the next week, because of course I could not leave Tanzania, even though I was due to leave, I had to stay. You know, I wanted to ensure that the embassy was going to be okay in the aftermath until my replacement. Well, the head of the communications team arrived, because I wasn't the head, but I was the sole communication person there aside from the new lady who came. So I was acting in two capacities. So I worked with Washington on a daily, almost hourly basis. You know, asking, you know, I mean, telling them what was happening. And what was good about that is the CIO, Chief Information Officer for the State Department, was on the task force. And she kept asking me, Bella, are you okay? What's happening? You know, and I tell her, and I was very calm. And she's like, are you sure you're okay? Let me speak to, you know, to the doctor or to, you know, to the chargé. And sometimes I'd let her speak with people, and they're like, yeah, Bella's fine. She's kicking butt here. And she just couldn't believe it. And that's where I believe my career skyrocketed, because I'd never been chief of a section before. And I was acting in that capacity, even though my only assignment was in Beirut as my first time being a chief there, you know, chief, period. And so that kind of put an umph behind the decision the department made for a female to be a chief, you know, at a post, at a problematic post like, you know, Beirut was back then. And it just, my name just became known, and they gave me a heroism award for what I did almost single-handedly over the first, you know, 2 hours or so.
You really emerged as one of the leaders of that terrible event.
Oh, absolutely.
Excuse me. Did you experience any post-traumatic fallout privately? I mean, did you have any since, you know, in your life thereafter, that you had been through the trauma of, you know, losing. I mean, you were just talking to one of your colleagues moments before she was blown up. Did things, you know, pop up for you in the following year or two? I mean, how do you feel, you know, that trauma affected you?
Well, I mean, interesting. During the event when they did send a team out to get me, I mean, I was moving so fast, like I did not care about anything that had happened to the people. I had to work. You know, I was in work mode. And they kept saying, Bella, what's wrong with you? Slow down. You have to sleep. You have to eat. You have to cry like others are. And I'm like, why? I have a job to do. This is, you know, I'm a diplomat. I'm trained to do this. And I had one guy who held me and actually held me down and was spoon feeding me. Because he said, you have to eat, Bella. You're going to pass out in this heat. So to answer your question, I really had forgotten about me, my wellness, you know, my physical and my mental, you know, wellness. So when I went to Beirut, I started feeling weird, like, oh, my God, I've been killed. And I went within. I didn't really do a lot with people. I just, you know, and I started shying away from crowds, even though I love Beirut, you know, I just didn't want to be around. And I hate to put it like this, but I didn't want, when I realized that we were targeted, we as Americans, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't want to be around Americans because, you know, the next time I might not survive. So through the years, you know, as I, you know, continued on with my career, you know, I never vocalized it to anyone except, you know, maybe Francis, my husband. But no, I just had a fear of being around large groups of American in foreign countries. And every once in a while, I would just freeze. And I said, are you okay? And I'm like, oh my God, you know, I said, I could have been killed. And this is like as late as like 5 years ago, you know, I think with the 20th anniversary of the bombing that we just went through, I think that has helped a lot. But yeah, I do have moments where I don't freak out, you know, like go into my little corner and cry my eyes out. But I do think, oh God, what if? Because I was headed back to that car. If that phone had not ringing, Dr. Georgiana, my parents would have never known what happened to me. They would not have believed that I was disintegrated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, indeed.
So your training served you well. Your training served you well, and even though you did have, you know, you've had some residual effect from it, you were able to act at a very high level. You were able to do important things that you were then recognized for. Tell us about the awards that you have won and the recognition that you've won from the United States government as a result of your work during that bombing.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, the ultimate was the Heroism Award. And I wasn't the only one who got one. There were other people who did heroic things. But it's basically was for, I used to have it on the wall, but I took it down because it's so big and I could read it to you. But it was for establishing communication in little or no time, you know, for the United States, for the president to communicate with our chargé d'affaires, our acting ambassador. And that's prime. In a crisis, I don't care how much you can report, you can manage, it all comes down to communication, to getting that information back to Washington. So that was pretty big because I heard, and I don't know for a fact, that some of my colleagues at the other post, which they sustained, you know, bigger bomb than we did, just could not function. Mm-hmm. And here I was alone, aside from the young lady who did rise to the occasion. I don't want to knock her because even though she was seriously hurt, she stayed and she helped me tremendously. So I got that. And of course, we get promoted based on performance. So I got a great performance evaluation that took me to my next grade level, which was awesome. I was a 4, FS 4, and we go from 9 to 1. Our grades, with 1 being the highest. So I mean, they didn't automatically promote me, you know, I competed, but of course my write up was quite substantial, and they recognized me for it. So I got a promotion out of it. And I got, you know, other awards like Superior Honor Award as a group. That is, I was able to use my team to, I didn't do it alone most of the time. I did have my group, and that was one of the guys who said, "Ma'am, I work for you. If you're here, I'm here. I'm not going home." And I thought that was just so meaningful. And so I got a Superior Honor Award. I think one was individual, but definitely one was for my team, and then one as an embassy team. So yeah, a lot of good things came out of what I did and was a part of during that horrific event.
Right, and you really established yourself as a foreign diplomat. I mean, you really established yourself as an example of excellence. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, there is some wonderful information that has been sent out by your publisher about, 10 tips for people who might want to be considering, working in foreign service. And I think that they apply across the board for anything, actually. So when we come back, I'd love to go over those with you because it's really quite excellent advice that you have to give to people who are thinking about this line of work. And I think for anyone who's thinking of any kind of a service job, I think that this is excellent information. So don't go away, everyone. We're going to be right back again with Vella.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number.
train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
Speaking with Vella Mbena. Vella is an author. She's the author of Muddy Roads, Blue Skies. She is also an award-winning American who has served in the Foreign Service as an ambassador to many different. What's that?
Oh, yes. I need to make one correction. A lot of folks call me an ambassador, and I don't like to accept the title per se, because the title is reserved for the person who lead the embassy. However, I don't normally say anything because I did serve as an ambassador to my people, you know, to America. So I represented America as well as, you know, my subcultures within State Department. So, please forgive me, but I just needed to caveat that.
Right. Well, I think from everything I've read about you and been told about you that you were working as an ambassador. Ambassador really means one who really brings together people.
Absolutely.
Brings people together.
Yes.
And
yes,
so you definitely worked at a very high level as a shall we say, a foreign ambassador. We don't have to give you the title of a particular country ambassador. But
yeah, exactly. I just was like, oh, Lord, I don't want an ambassador. Because I'm like, well, who is this Vella Mbena? We never heard of her.
Well, it's pretty exciting. Let's talk about some of the things, the skills and behaviors that you think are really essential to foreign service. They do go back to your mom and your family and what you were taught there, but they also apply across the board. Somebody's listening and they're wondering how to get ahead at their job. I think this would be a great list. The first one is do the work and more. Dutifully do your work every day and do it well. And then you said, and when your work is done, see if you can help someone else with theirs. Now, isn't that a marvelous idea? Isn't that marvelous? The idea of generosity, of cooperation, the idea of being connected to one another in that way. And you said, my mother's hard work from dawn to dusk mandate shaped your professional work ethic. And so what you're basically saying is, you know, work is, I have something, I'm looking at it right now. It's from India, and it says, work is man's greatest function. And it's this whole wonderful piece that goes on to talk about the meaning and the purpose of work in our life. And what you're basically saying here is work is an elixir. Work is a connector. Work is a nourishment. Work is a purpose and a contribution. So working, do not be afraid to work, which is kind of pretty wonderful. This second one, find a mentor or find a role model. Developing trusting relationships with colleagues can help guide and develop your career. That I'm sure you had many of them along the way, yes?
Yes, indeed, I did, official and non-official. They were my wings, absolutely.
Respect the chain of command. Boy, this is important because I think today, with all the competition and the kind of dog-eat-dog attitude we have in our culture, people forget that, you know, people get to where they are sometimes, you know, not because they're so capable, but most of the time because it's an evolution and it's a process. And we really do need to respect the chain of command, respect the process, which is something I'm sure you saw a lot of not going on as well as going on. Yes.
Right, absolutely. And that I'm big on respecting the chain of command, maybe because I grew up around a military base and, you know, military personnel, they do respect the chain of command or else. And plus my mom being, you know, she even today she calls herself a general. I'm a general. You know, we had to respect that chain of command. And because I feel so strongly in that, I was a recruiter for one of my two tours in the United States. And I gravitated toward trying to recruit more military people who had the skills and abilities, of course, to join the Foreign Service, because they understood, and they understood from a battle perspective as well, from being overseas, from being in battle, that you have to respect the chain of command if you expect success for the mission. Mm-hmm. So that was big for me. And that's one of the first things I do or say in my meeting when I arrive at a new embassy and brief my staff. Mm-hmm. Respect, not just for me and you all, but respect for my position. I will value what you say, and I will take a lot of what you say, but I have the last say because I have to account for this entire section to my ambassador, who has to report to the President of the United States. So that's big for me, even not just in professional, but in family as well.
And I can hear that it's a very heartfelt sentiment that you have about serving your country. You also said, don't be afraid to share ideas. You said, be strategic, don't leave your career to chance, think carefully about the path you want to take. And finally, remember the new skills can qualify for more advanced positions. So think about what you're learning, think about what you're doing, and be clear, be strategic about your career. I love this one. Know when to lead and when to follow.
Yes.
I think that is true in life. You know, that is, you know, a lot of us, you know, it's all about, you know, leading, being in charge, being in control, leading. I think the biggest thing that I've seen in my decades and decades in medicine and in healthcare, because I've always had two careers, one in media and one in medicine. And the thing that I've seen is this terrible need to control everything. I don't know if that's singularly American. I don't know. But we live in a culture of control. And most of the time, we can barely control ourselves. Let's try to control everything else that's going on. So that was really wonderful. And then I want to read this. I want to read this because we've got a few minutes left, and we've got to talk about your husband. You're not getting off the phone without talking about your husband. You've got be dedicated, be useful, even in bad conditions. Learn to stay on task, even during chaotic times, which you so well demonstrated during the terrorism. And then the last one, which I really appreciate, and I think this is true in work, in life, in marriage. Know when to leave.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I gotta get it on.
Know when to leave. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You shared with us in the pre-interview that you had been married before.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously you knew when there was a time to leave, but you had, I mean, you know, can we talk? We're both females and we're both girls. So romance. I'm sorry. See, I'm your mother would probably think I'm such a girl, but I believe that love and romance is the dessert. I mean, everything you've done is so wonderful, and so many congratulations on your profoundly successful life and career. But let's face it, Vela, let's get down and dirty here. What is the dessert? What is the cherry on the cake that you met this wonderful man who became your husband and who, in your own words, says is the best thing that ever happened to you besides your child? So you got to spill on this one and tell us all about the romance and how you met, okay?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, in the Foreign Service, being a Black female in some of these countries, you're prime, you know, because you don't have a lot of us around and out there, you know, and, you know, overseas. So I just, you know, I kept putting folks off. I'm like, no, I'm not marrying. I don't want anything else to do with marriage. Then in Tanzania, I wanted to plan for a trip
bringing my kids to go, like, I think to Arusha, the near Mount Kilimanjaro. And I went into this office, and there was this little skinny boy, you know, with big ears and big glasses, you know, trying to sell me this package. And I'm like, okay. And then he's like, okay, can I keep in touch with you? I'm like, sure. And he sent me a few emails, and then, you know, life happened, and I'd see him around town. Hey, how you doing? Then I went off, the bomb happened, you know, and then I went off to Lebanon, and I didn't hear from him. Then I need to go back to Africa to put closure to it, you know, versus going to some other, you know, part of the world, you know, because of the bomb. I didn't have a chance to put closure to it. Then I got an email from him, and I'm like, well, who's this? I'm like, oh, and he's like, I've been thinking about you for the past year. And he said, I really want to get to know you. And I sent an email back just before I, you know, went on leave. And I said, how do you want to get to know me? As a potential wife or someone who you would like to sleep with? And then he just went quiet. So I went to New York to visit my sister. And when I got back, I found an email from him. And he said, you floored me. He said, I've never had that kind of, and he said, I would like to get to know you as a potential spouse. And I'm like, well, let's meet. And he was in Tanzania and I was in Uganda. So we would, you know, come back and forth and nothing happened. We were just, you know, like just getting to know each other. I'm like, God, what's wrong with this guy? He's not going to make a move on me. So then one day he said he was coming and he was bringing a gift, you know, a surprise. And when he came out of the airport, he had, you know, I didn't say anything. I'm like, what's the surprise? He said, I had you some flowers. Arusha is known for its beautiful roses, you know, big bud, long budded roses.
Yeah.
And he said they took it because he didn't have a permit. They took it in Ugandan airport, you know, the customs, because he didn't have a permit. I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. So, you know, we enjoyed the weekend. And he said, I'll make it up to you. Next month when he came, he and the expediter, who always went out with me, they came out with two carts, these long boxes. I mean, about 50 of these boxes. And I'm like, what's that? That's yours? He said, no, it's yours. And I said, what is it? Did you bring Tanzania with you? And he said, smell. And I just, it was like a florist around me in that hot, stinking air at that airport. And he had over 500 long stem, long budded
oh
roses.
Oh my God, Villa.
And I had to find buckets. You know, I didn't have enough vases. I didn't have enough anything to put those in. And my house looked like either a funeral or a wedding. My brother, who was in Congo next door with the United Nations, he came because I told him, come on, we should meet this guy. I think he's the one. And when he walked in the house, he said, oh, God. And what's going on? Who's getting married? What has happened? I mean, it was just so many. And Francis stepped out and he said, love happened. I want to marry your sister.
Oh, wow. What is so wonderful about this is that to this day, you're still crazy about him and each other. I'm sure you're crazy. Isn't that, you know, what a blessing. What a blessing. See, I'm a real old romantic. I believe that if we are blessed in our lifetime, and very few of us are, but if we are blessed in our lifetime with true love, love from a heart, a good heart, that is the crown. Vila, I can't tell you how much I have enjoyed this interview with you. We're at the end. Hard to believe. Let's tell the listeners where they can find your book. It should be able to be found anywhere, right?
Yes, just about any, you know, Barnes & Noble's online, bookstores, Amazon for sure. I have paper and electronic copy, and I believe my project manager is putting up the Audible and the hard copy either this week or next week. So all different versions of it. Of course, it's just in English at the moment. Hopefully we can put it in Swahili and some other languages later, but it's definitely Amazon. And I also have a Facebook for Muddy Roads, Blue Skies, and there you have a portal, you know, to buy the book. And also we have a website for the book, and it also has a portal where you can, you know, buy the book.
Let's tell them about your website. It's Villa, V-E-L-L-A-M. B-E-N-N-A, VillaMbena.com. You can read all about her, her books, her work, her stories, her life. And Villa, just a pleasure. Congratulations on everything. And much happiness to you and your family. And listeners, don't forget to come back next week when we have another inspiring, uplifting, and informational interview here on Living Above the Drama.